The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
You live here. He lives here.
Well, my 90 has me for good now. I, like the other caller, used to listen to you on that other station.
Chris, so glad you're back on the air. You're the best in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I enjoy your show very, very much.
Great show as usual.
Hey, good morning, Chris.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris Stegall on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
I'm going to the Bloomsburg Fair. Or is it over? Has it already happened?
No, September.
A little past six. Never been to Bloomsburg in my life, but I'm going to their fair. There's a Dr. Levine dunk tank, which, of course, is being called transphobic. Hey, good morning. It's Wednesday, middle of the week. So glad to have you with us. Telephone number, 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. A Cousin It dunk tank? Are you kidding? I feel like we could do all kinds of creative games. Themed foods for Dr. Levine. You know, you could have the hot dog or the walking taco. 610-850-0990, or just call it the Dr. Levine special. You know, they're at the food truck. We're also online. You can download our app and stream, 990theanswer.com. Bloomsburg's fair, backpedaling after accusations. And, of course, guess what they're accusing the Bloomsburg Fair coordinators of the dunk tank for Dr. Levine? Guess what they're being accused of? You can guess. You know. Because this is the classic game. I mean, what a classic left-wing game. Appoint someone specifically because of their victim status to a job. That's step one. You are Black, you are gay, you are Hispanic, you are whatever you are. That's what makes you qualified for this post. So let's just be clear that this person is the Secretary of Health in Pennsylvania because of the transgender status. That is the qualification. And to be very, very clear, that's what was said. That's the press about this person. That's always been the case. I remember when this person was appointed, there were no discussions of the qualifications to run a state's entire health department. Just that there was such history being made that Dr. Levine was trans. This was supposed to be enough. Transgender qualifies you to be in it. If you're transgender, you can be a health secretary too. It doesn't matter if you have any qualifying medical degrees or corroborating medical experience to run an entire health department that may require expertise in things like, oh, I don't know, pandemics? Should they erupt? Nah, it doesn't matter. As long as you've had your lady parts installed and, cut a dick off of me, whatever they call the procedure. If you've had that, that's all you need. As long as you've done that, you're fine. You're qualified to be Secretary of Health. So, having said that, when you criticize this person in any way, what are you labeled? Transphobic. It's a great game. They did this for 8 years with Barack Obama, first Black president. Criticize him? What were you? Racist. It's a great trick. So, of course, that's what the Bloomsburg Fair people, at the center of the controversy, a dunk tank featuring a person dressed in the likeness of Secretary Rachel Levine, wearing a floral dress and blonde wig. Levine is a transgender woman who has faced disparaging remarks as a highly visible member of Governor Tom Wolf's administration. You see, you're not supposed to say anything disparaging about a public official who's trans. Isn't that a neat game? I guess, you know, maybe I'll run this by Pat Toomey at 7:40 today. Senator Toomey going to join us. I'll just say, hey, Senator, I got the solution for you. If you want to continue to be the senator from Pennsylvania and never receive criticism again, just put on a wig and call yourself Linda. No one will ever be allowed to criticize you again. And if they do, you're transphobic. That's all you have to do. Throw that card out there. The Bloomsburg Fair's Facebook page circulating photos of the dunk tank and the person wearing the dress and wig after Saturday's carnival. Fair's Facebook page, which has since been deleted, directly referenced Levine. Proceeds from the dunk tank raised money for the department's fire departments in Columbia and Montour County area. Dr. Levine, thank you, the post said. You were a hit and raised lots of money for the local fire companies. Wonder why so many were trying to dunk you. Thanks, everyone that came out to support our local fire companies. The Facebook post prompted a swift backlash. Now, remember what I said to you yesterday? In this very segment yesterday, what did I tell you? The winged monkeys of social media, this not real, phony barrage you get of bots and keyboard warriors who are all coordinated on social media. What did they do? They descend on the little Bloomsburg Fair Facebook page and scare the hell out of them. The Bloomsburg Fair Facebook page probably has 500 followers or something. It's tiny, I'm sure. And whoever administers it, I'm sure was scared. See, this is the thing that the left does, and they know they can count on it. It scares the hell out of a lot of people if you don't know what's coming. If you don't understand it, you get scared, and you think the world is mad at you. That's by design. A swift backlash from LGBTQ advocates denouncing the game as transphobic. Among the critics, oh, you remember this little fairy, twinkle fairy, Brian Sims of Philadelphia, who wrote the sweet little cherubic Brian Sims. What a sweet little, what a vile human being this guy is. Standing out in front of an abortion clinic, swearing and screaming. This guy is the maybe one of the worst virulent left-wing maniacs there is. Little Twinkle Toes Brian Sims wrote that he was disgusted by the game and the fair's subsequent promotion of it. You see, you can't criticize Dr. Levine because, above all else, no matter how many old people Dr. Levine has killed, no matter how mismanaged and totalitarian Dr. Levine's policies on COVID is, it doesn't matter. You mustn't criticize Dr. Levine because, first and foremost, Dr. Levine is trans, don't you see? So this makes you transphobic if you criticize Dr. Levine. The Bloomsburg Fair and Fire Companies involved, oh, Dr. Levine and the LGBTQ+. They're running out of, like, there's not enough space in the line anymore with the plus. Now they're adding the plus. What's plus? What more is there to add?
I don't know. It's
plus.
I try to think of the alphabet people skipped by Dave Chappelle. I think.
What is plus? I don't even know plus. Is that like Disney Plus?
Well, because the Q is questioning, right? That's what Q is.
Yeah, like what's left?
Yeah.
I don't know how many more genders there are. There are only two that I know, unless they've picked more. They created some new gender in the lab that I've missed.
We'll have to wait for the convention to find out one of the speeches.
A massive apology for perpetuating hatred, but it also owes us an investigation into how this happened and measurable plans to ensure it doesn't happen again and a track record of accountability that can only be earned by doing what's right going forward. You hear these totalitarian little... You hear this? This guy thinks he can bully people at the Bloomsburg Fair into proving to him they've earned the right to continue to go forward. They have to prove to Brian Sims you're worthy to continue your fair. Ensure to him this won't happen again and that you're... What is this? Ensure what won't happen again? The Bloomsburg Fair responded to the criticism with a lengthy statement that includes multiple misspellings of Levine's name. How disrespectful. They didn't even take the time to learn how to spell the great Dr. Levine's. Look, I'm sorry. When you don't understand your genitalia, you are not qualified to run the entire Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's health department. When you don't know what your gender is, when you literally cannot understand your genitalia, you are not qualified to run the health department of Pennsylvania. The end of story. And I'll say it. And by the way, I have half a notion to get a dunk tank rolled out right here in Philadelphia for Dr. Levine. And let little Brian Sims talk to me about it. Because I'll tell you one thing, you're not going to bully me the way you bully the Bloomsburg Fair people. You may think you can do it with people like them, but you're not going to do it with people like me. This is where you got to stand up and say, oh, no. You're a public official. I get to criticize you any damn time I like, any damn way I please, and you'll shut up about it. You're the elected official. I'm the taxpaying representative, represented. This is consent of the governed stuff we're talking about. You represent me. You work for me. My tax money pays your salary. You don't get to tell me what I'm allowed to say and not say. Got it? You tiny, impish little goon. On behalf of the Bloomsburg Fair, we're responding to a series of inquiries and comments. Using the likeness of an individual dressed as Dr. Rachel Levine. Now, do you know why they're mad? Without even knowing who this person was or really having a clear picture of what they're upset about, I'll guarantee you I know what it is. And I can kind of see, I do have an example of the picture here, and I can guarantee you I kind of know what it is. What makes it offensive? Let's think about it. Let's walk it out. What makes this offensive? Go ahead.
The fact that they are dunking a figure of PA that is a transgender person.
No, it's worse than that.
Oh.
You got to think about the picture.
Oh.
What about the physical setting? Did you see this picture?
Yeah.
Okay, I've got it. It's black and white, so I haven't seen it up close, but... What about the picture fest, Eddie? See, there's a reason this is offensive, and this is the trick. This is the trap. And actually, if they were to be completely honest with themselves, they'd understand that this actually catches them in their own kind of silly tumble dryer of hypocrisy. But anyway.
Is it because a man is dressed as a woman?
That's exactly. Wow. That's exactly right. What makes this offensive, don't you see, is it's a big burly guy in a floral print dress. Why, this is shocking. If we got a beer bikini model and called her Dr. Levine, this wouldn't be an issue, don't you see? Because that's what we're all supposed to see when we look at Cousin It. We're supposed to look at Cousin It and go, oh, that's a beautiful woman. Look at that beautiful, natural woman. Why, that looks like totally a woman who doesn't look at all like a man dressed as a woman. I am a robot. I am a zombie. That was what I've been programmed to say that. Not here. That's a man, baby. That's a man. That's a big fat guy like me dressed as a woman. And we're all supposed to act like it's a woman. So the Bloomsburg Fair people took a fat guy and dressed him up as a woman. And that's outrageous. You can't do that. Shocking. I got news for you. That's how your precious Dr. Levine looks to all of us. Like a man dressed as a woman. You're not supposed to say that. Guess what I did? And I'll say it again. And if that makes me a hater, makes me a hater. I calls him as I see him. That's a man. Dr. Levine's a man. And all the reconstructive surgeries in the world and all the twisted verbiage in the world is not going to make Dr. Levine a woman. He's a biological man. And he looks like a man. And he looks like a man dressed as a woman. And he is a national disgrace. And you just take a look at the comments all over the country when Dr. Levine's picture is posted anywhere. Go ahead. Look up stories. Look up Dr. Levine stories that have been written, that have been sent around the country. You'll see the human reaction most people have when they see Dr. Levine is, wow, That doesn't look like a Rachel. Because it's not. His name's Milton or some damn thing. I don't know. But look, I'll play the game. I'll stay out of this. I don't care. I haven't talked. Fast Eddie, have I mentioned this much? I mean, Cousin It. But it's, you know, for better or worse, whatever. Cousin It is what it is. Dr. Levine is what it is. Like, that's the health secretary. So from that point of view, that's who we're stuck with. It's the policies that are being implemented at this point that we discuss. That's what I've stayed focused on. But when people decide to criticize Dr. Levine and they don't like it because it's a man dressed as a woman and that's offensive, guess what? That's what he is. And you ain't gonna do this revisionist history, newspeak, Orwellian garbage with me. You might be able to do it with the Bloomsburg Fair, but not with me. I got nothing to lose, and I'm not afraid of you people. I'm not afraid. I don't care. I'll say it, and I'll say it three times over. I'll say it loud, and I'll say it everywhere. I'll say it anytime I'm asked. I'm willing to lose my job over this. Dr. Levine is a man dressed as a woman, and an ugly woman at that. And guess what? I can say it. I can say it because she is paid with my tax dollars. She works for me. And I get to say whatever I damn well please about Dr. Levine. You want a piece of me, Brian Sims? And I'm sure you do because I'm a handsome man. Come on. This ain't the Bloomsburg Fair and it ain't my first rodeo. 610-850-0990 is the number. 610-850-0990. Somebody's going to have to say it, so I'll do it. That's outrageous what they did at the fair. Dressing that big burly guy up like a woman. Raising money, dunking Dr. Levine. That's transphobic. No, that's actually just a guy dressed as a woman. Which is what Dr. Levine is. It's not even an editorial comment. It's actually really factually spot on. This is Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
Hi, this is Hugh Hewitt. Join me weekday mornings at 11 on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
The incident comes after Dr. Levine was called sir at least three times in a press briefing. Remember the Philadelphia Magazine people called him an accidental cousin. It's an accidental icon. Yeah. Now, look, I don't even, setting aside the transgender thing for a minute, Dr. Levine is one of the most embarrassing, colossal failures of leadership in all the coronavirus story. Like right up there on the Mount Rushmore of COVID failures with Andrew Cuomo and Governor Wolf and Governor Murphy. These people sent our elderly, our most vulnerable COVID-positive patients, right into the brush fire of elder folks' homes and just torched lives. Most of the lives lost to COVID are old folks that they killed. That's the legacy of Dr. Levine.
Senator Doug Mastriano called for Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine's resignation this morning, holding her responsible for the waves of COVID-19 deaths in nursing homes in Pennsylvania. Do you have a reaction to that? And what's your assessment of Dr. Levine's performance on the nursing home issue?
I haven't seen the letter. My assessment of Dr. Levine is she's done a phenomenal job. And I think we've got to be careful about blaming the messenger for the message. Dr. Levine has done a phenomenal job of making sure that we...
No, she's not the messenger. She's the actual general. This is not a messenger to this is the person leading, not the messenger. This is the person that you tiny, tiny little pipsqueak of a department store dummy, milquetoast, slope-shouldered, mediocre loser. This is the person that you have hidden behind. You've hidden behind Levine's skirt all along.
Well, it's what she wants to do. It's what she said. Well, that's the guidance that she provided. I'm only following Dr. Levine's orders. I'm just a widow governor. I don't know what to do. Dr. Levine tells me what to do, and I'm kind of frightened because she's tougher than me.
So you have put Dr. Levine at the forefront and actually hidden behind Dr. Levine and said it's Dr. Levine's orders that we're all living under. So for you to say, well, Dr. Levine is only the messenger. No, Dr. Levine is actually setting the policy. That's fundamentally false. Dr. Levine, you were a hit and you raised lots of money, they said on their Facebook page, for our fire companies. Wonder why so many people were trying to dunk you. Now, you see, of course, that also, the way that's read by the grievance community on the left is, are you suggesting all those people showed up to dunk Dr. Levine because the trans thing? Dr. Levine's trans, and so all those racists and bigots in Montour and Columbia, Pennsylvania counties, they showed up in mass to say, yeah, let's go punish the trans health secretary. Yeah, this is the way. It's basically like burning Dr. Levine in effigy for all the transphobes out there in Montour and Columbia County. No, we just really hate the leadership. And we think what you've done to Pennsylvanians in terms of job losses and slaughter of our elderly is abhorrent. The fact that you don't understand your genitals just sort of makes it more alarming than anything else. I love that, but just don't, never make any mistake about it. They're upset because a big fat guy put on a dress and glasses and a blonde wig. How dare you? That's rude to Dr. Levine. What, would you have us bring in a Swedish bikini model? And hang a sign around her that says Dr. Levine? Because that's what whatever Dr. Levine sees him herself as in the mirror, that ain't what we see. Sorry. I know there's some happy self-talk going on with Dr. Levine. I'm a beautiful woman. I'm a beautiful woman. Well, guess what? I can stand in front of the mirror every morning and say, I'm a 6'2" underwear model with a thick head of hair. Don't make it so, and it ain't what everybody else sees when they see me walking through the office. I demand you treat me as a 6'2", full thick head of hair underwear model, Fast Eddie. I'm a handsome, handsome, rugged man that people like to look at partially nude.
Yes. The Duluth trading ads.
You would think I was a lunatic if I came in and seriously looked you in the face and told you how handsome I was and that I'm just on the cusp of a modeling career. You would think me a loon, and you would talk about me behind my back in the office lounge with others. That guy thinks he's an underwear model. That guy thinks he's 6'2" with a thick head of hair. That guy thinks he's... But no, when a guy shows up and grows his hair out and puts on a dress, we're all supposed to go, that's a beautiful lady and I see nothing else. Right. Yeah, we're not going to play your games. So, you know, bully the fire companies of Montour and Columbia County if you want, but you ain't going to bully me into submission. That's a man, baby. Telephone number 610-850-0990. Meanwhile, over in the first state, there is a fracturing among the league of unimpressive, slope-shouldered, mediocre gentlemen. The governor, there's a fissure, there's a crack happening in the northeastern league of mediocre, unimpressive governors. Carney, the governor of Delaware, is angry that Phil Murphy has basically put every state of the union, including him. Did you hear that? Murphy comes out yesterday and he says every state has to quarantine if they visit New Jersey. I mean, not every, but it may as well be every. It's like 34 states or something.
And Missouri was on there.
Oh, I have no doubt about it. I have half a mind to just drive to Pennsauk in the day and just go, I'm here. I just came from Missouri and I'm here. Come and get me! And then, you know, speed back across the bridge. Although there'd probably be reciprocity and Tom Wolf would help arrest me or something.
Ooh, you'd have
on the other side of the bridge.
What is it, the Delaware Port Authority.
That's right. That's right. I'd be arrested on either side of the bridge. I'd jump in the river, they'd still.
Your Easy Pass is registered as coming from Missouri 2 weeks ago?
You know what it is? It's like the classic end of any... It's like the precipice of any like action movie where you get two villains coming at you on each end of the bridge. I'm trapped in the middle. And I have to jump on the river. You have Wolf on one side, Murphy on the other side, waiting to snatch me into their clutches. So Murphy said everyone in the country has to be quarantined for 2 weeks if they visit New Jersey, basically. And Carney's like, what the hell, man? I thought we had a deal. I got everything under control here in Delaware. And Murphy said, nope, you people in Delaware, you can't come into New Jersey. Now, that's, of course, problematic for a lot of Delawareans as just regular general everyday commerce happens frequently between people in the northern part of the state in New Jersey all the time.
We actually have Carney's reaction just because it was so good. And he speaks like Trump here.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm mad as hell, frankly.
Oh.
And it doesn't make any sense. You're going to set me off and you're just going to sit down and let me answer. Then watch it happen. We're right. As I said to Governor Murphy and Governor Cuomo last week, we're going to be on and off unless we stop testing. And we're not going to stop testing.
Well, isn't that an interesting admission? One of the League of Unimpressive Gentlemen, a rare moment of honesty. Governor Carney of Delaware said, you know, as long as we keep testing, we're going to have this. There's a story in front of me today about the Philadelphia health inspector. I don't even know what these people's titles are anymore. I don't even care. They're little fiefdoms of health. Whoever the guy is that makes decisions about the health in Philadelphia, he said, oh, well, you know, on again, off again. That's what he basically said, that we're going to be treated to a calendar year of everybody in the pool, everybody out of the pool, everybody in the pool, everybody out of the pool. And then he said, the reason is, just as Carney said appropriately, it's true. You test people, you just keep testing, arbitrarily testing people, and guess what you're going to get? Sometimes more, sometimes less. And because these tests will sometimes give you more, everybody goes, oh, no, look at all the cases. And then sometimes it gives you less. Oh, the cases seem to be ebbing. Oh, no, look at all the cases. Oh, the cases seem to be ebbing. Oh, no, cases. Ebbing. Cases, ebbing. Cases, ebbing. We're going to be treated to this all year long. It is not a way to govern. It is no way to run the economy. You can't run your state that way. And this Democrat Carney is finally waking up and realizing, oh, wait a minute, this could really be costly to my state. This actually hurts residents of my state doing business in places like New Jersey. And we do. The reciprocity, I'm sure, I don't really know the financial ups and downs of Delaware and New Jersey, but I would imagine there's probably an extensive network of people who either do work or commerce or leisure or whatever, travel. I don't know, but I would bet there's probably a lot. I bet there are people in this audience who, you know, work with in Delaware, or Delawareans who go to New Jersey, vice versa, whatever. What does that mean? So think about it. Let's say you live in Wilmington and you got to drive into New Jersey to work every day. What does that mean now? You got to sequester yourself? Every time you drive into Delaware, you got to stay in New Jersey? You got to get a hotel? You can't go into New Jersey?
It's bizarre. Like, did Carney do anything to prompt? Like, I don't understand. I don't understand the move, especially because he's a Democrat governor.
A week after removing Delaware from their quarantine list, the three states, well, now see, it wasn't just Murphy, though. New York and Connecticut did it, too. So there's been a break, a schism with the League of Unimpressive Gentlemen.
Yeah.
The slope-shouldered mediocres. Where's Wolf on this? I'm surprised he didn't jump in.
Maybe I'll check for a press briefing today.
I'm surprised Wolf didn't get on it. I mean, Murph, if Connecticut, New Jersey, and New York decided Delaware is tainted for some reason and isn't allowed into the state, why didn't Wolf get on the action? I'm curious. Delaware's seven-day rolling average of percentage of positive tests has stayed well under 10% in recent weeks. It's also under the 5% mark. But Carney said since Delaware is doing so much testing, its positive rate can go above 10% per 100,000 residents because of a smaller population. Math, everybody! Look at that! A Democrat has discovered math! Huzzah! What a day! What an exciting day! There's a Democrat who's discovered math, proportionality. This gets back to this debate about testing more than anyone in the world. That's not true. That's not true. Well, as a percentage, we're a huge country. There are 330 million people, and we're cranking out tests at a faster clip and administering them at a faster clip than anyone in the world by a lot. More people in Italy have been tested. Italy can fit into Delaware. What a stupid. And so, Carney, this is the same thing he's saying. My state is very tiny. And we're testing every idiot in town. And guess what? We're going to see more positive tests. And when you take my percentage of state population and then, you know, you find positive cases, it's going to look worse because my state is smaller. Math. The enemy of Democrats.
Let's go, girls.
It's my mother. This is exposition.
I'm going to
God, man, what have you done?
That's not your mother. It's a man, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on. Why won't this wig come off? Sin.
Yeah, hold on.
No, my mother. Oh, mother. Mother, are you all right?
What? Austin, have you gone mad?
No.
To be very clear,
I have explaining to do.
Yeah, to be very clear, that is Dr. Levine's hair. It's not a wig. Telephone number 610-850-0990, but it's still a man. 610-850-0990, the number 610-850-0990. But you understand, this is very important. The left is trying to convince you it is transphobic to say that. That's a word, that it has any meaning. I am afraid of Dr. Levine. Phobia, fear. Transphobic. I'm afraid of someone trans. I am afraid of someone trans. Let's walk that out. I am not afraid of anyone trans. I think they're lunatics. I think they need professional help. I don't fear them in the slightest. And, hey, bygones. Do your thing. You do you. You want to be beautiful in a dress? Go for it, sister, brother. You know what? No harm, no foul. I don't judge. I literally don't judge you in the sense that I would ever make trouble or even mock you. I would go, well, okay. I mean, whatever makes him or her feel great. Clearly a man in a dress, but okay. I mean, I don't know who he thinks he's fooling, but if that makes him feel good, fine. However, let's just, again, this is important to reset. When you decide to become the most important and most powerful figure in the midst of a pandemic, if you think that you every bit of your person is now not up for grabs in terms of criticism, specifically related to health and health decisions, this isn't just any matter. This is the public health of Pennsylvanians. And Dr. Levine's credentials are, he no longer dresses as a man, as far as I can tell. Other than that, Dr. Levine is a child psychologist. So I have real problems beyond the gender confusion of Dr. Levine. I have a fun. You know what offends me? Here's what offends me. Everybody's always offended on the left. I'm offended. You know what I'm offended? I'm offended that the person setting health policy in Pennsylvania doesn't understand gender. I'm offended that the only qualifications for the person running health policy in Pennsylvania in the midst of a pandemic is a child psychologist. That's the only qualifications this person brings to the table. That offends me. I don't think this person knows, well, there's a lot they don't know, but this person doesn't have any idea how to manage a pandemic, period, full stop, and shows it with regularity and refuses to answer for it. And yet is sending some of the most capricious, arbitrary, punitive executive orders right through Tom Wolf based on what we don't know, but it's certainly not an understanding of science. So this person offends me. It's not, I'm not afraid of this person. I'm offended by this person. This person has no business being the Secretary of Health. If Dr. Levine were my next door neighbor, I have nothing to say. Nothing. I wouldn't give Dr. I would even take the traditional Stigall plate of Christmas cookies over to Dr. Levine. I would. I'm serious. I have no there's only one other person that I know somewhat from a business I wouldn't even say professional relationship. I don't know this person well, but I have interacted with and how do you want to say? I've worked to reach out and communicate with an individual who identifies as a conservative, who is a man who became a woman, who from time to time communicates with this show and has tried to kind of get my head right with it. And I have tried my level best to be respectful to this person and say, I really appreciate your conversation. I don't hate you. I have no, you know, like, that's your thing, and I'm not going to try to obviously talk you out of it. But I am nowhere close to the new speak of man becomes woman, and I now have to pretend man never existed and gender doesn't matter. I can't do it. If that makes me hateful, so be it. I can't do it. And then if you want to run for public office and take my tax dollars to pay your salary and govern me and expect me to not question you because you're trans, and any criticism of you makes me transphobic, that's not going to work. That doesn't work this way. You don't get to use then the trans thing as a cudgel to ward off any criticism. And the time-honored tradition of people dressing up to mock political figures, you also don't get to say men can't dress up as women to mock Dr. Levine because that's offensive, that's transphobic. That's literally what Dr. Levine is, a man dressed as a woman. I can't say this enough. And it's like, this is very, Eddie, I have to say this while I'm allowed. There may come a day where we quite literally won't be allowed, and I don't mean by my corporate management here at Salem. Thank God I have a company that still allows me to say it. I suspect that if I said this with any other radio broadcast company, I'd be summarily taught. I may not even get to finish the show. They may have thrown me out of here before 7. So it's a real thing when I tell you, even being able to talk like this, it's getting harder. You wouldn't find anyone on TV saying this. Men who dress as women and then expect us to act like they're women, and then if we decide to mock them and use a man dressed as a woman, that's considered transphobic. No, that's actually what we see. We're making fun of what the person actually looks like, and Dr. Levine is a man and looks like a man dressed as a woman. That's not hate speech. That's just me saying a true statement. That's a statement of fact that some in the LGBTQ plus, whatever the hell it is, community want me to pretend Dr. Levine is a beautiful Swedish bikini model. No. I'm not going to do it. Understand? Never. Never. You'll never make me. Never.
Right.
610-850-0990. I don't know. Every now and again, I feel like I've just got to really... Because I just, this newspeak crap, this is how it works. It creeps in and creeps in and creeps in until people are afraid to ever say it again. And then before you know it, everybody's just biting their tongue as the guy walks by that's clearly a guy, dressed as a woman, and we're all supposed to act like that's not a dude, that's not a dude, that's a beautiful lady. No. No. Things mean things. Words mean things. Gender means something. It is what it is. And this insane Orwellian world in which we live, where you're told what is isn't, up is down, and you're going to accept that this gaslighting garbage, the rules set by the left, and any criticisms leveled is phobic. And you must be banned or punished or whatever. To hell with you. This is Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
I've been so wound up this morning, I haven't even told you what's coming. My apologies. Telephone number 610-850-0990, 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com, sitting out on the front porch of Stately Stegall Manor last night, enjoying a cigar, watching the thunderstorms roll in. It is what a lovely night, you know, when that rain comes. Did you get some of that rain?
I did, but I didn't see it. I was in bed by the time it hit us.
I couldn't resist. Ran outside and sat there. It felt like we'd been, you know, it's so funny because this is a pretty damp part of the country on balance. We get quite a bit of moisture generally. But it's been such a long, hot slog. I said to Christine, it feels like, you know, back when I grew up in the Midwest and you'd hear, you know, old farmers talk about the long dry spell. And it felt like that. It just felt like this painfully long dry period. So this storm comes rolling through last night, and I'm like, oh, ah. Felt like a beer commercial or something. Very refreshing, you know, sitting out there enjoying the rain. But this morning, you got this morning, it's like a pea soup.
Yeah.
Now everything's just 10 times, like, not only is it hot, but now it's that wet, hot sponge feel. Eek.
This from history class years past, but apparently in colonial times, the army was allowed to wear their Caribbean uniforms up in the Philadelphia area.
For real?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So 95 degrees for the high today, and another chance of a thunderstorm kicking up today or tonight, maybe tomorrow. Going to be kind of unsettled. 91 again for the high tomorrow, 78 now. And speaking of weather, I worked with a lady for years at my old gig here in town who did the weather for our show, and then I left, and shortly after, unbeknownst to me, totally unbeknownst to me, she was in a living hell. Nothing to do with me. I want you to know. Had it anything to do with me, she wouldn't be my guest today. Katie Failinger. You may or may not remember Katie Failinger from CBS 3. Years and years she did morning weather at CBS 3, and she did the weather on my radio show. And then I left the radio show, and then I think like a month later she left and made this big public announcement that she was in a dumpster fire of hell at this job that she'd been doing. I never knew it. Total pro, kept it from me, sounded great on the air, great friends. We never, you know, I knew we would talk offline, and I knew there were things about her gig that made her unhappy. I didn't realize how unhappy. She has two little twin girls, the love of her life, and her husband, and, you know, she's waking up. Those TV people, God bless them, they got to get up and spackle at like 2 a.m. I mean, it's just... You know, we get up early, but TV people have got to get up in the middle of the night to make sure all the primer and spackle and, you know, everything's painted up just right. And on top of that, this is where women really do have it just so much worse than men. It's not even close. TV women, I feel so bad for TV women because every little thing they do, every little thing they wear, any little change in the way they style their hair or color their hair or any little button or fabric or pattern or what it, that's all. And even, look, even the few times I've gone on to do TV, it doesn't matter what you say. The only thing you ever hear is, what's with that tie? Trim your beard. Yeah, did you hear anything about the debate we were having, though, on the border? So, you know, and then when these women get pregnant, oh my gosh, from other women, you're too pregnant to be on the air. You're too fat. Go home. Put your feet up. You don't need to be on TV anymore. Oh. She heard that kind of stuff.
Gosh.
It got to her to such an extent that she just couldn't take it anymore, and she walked. And she has started a whole new career, and she has a brand new book out, My Happy Place, How I DIY'd My Own Bliss. My old friend Katie Failinger is back with us at 8 o'clock today. Little reunion. Can't wait. Also coming up today, Pat Toomey on the show. All right? Gonna be a good one. Don't miss it. Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle. Download our free mobile app. Go to quicklinks at 990theanswer.com.
Per capita, the U.S. is conducting 50% more tests than Europe. We've conducted nearly three times as many tests as all of the other countries in the Western Hemisphere combined. Be over 50 million tests. This allows us to isolate those who are infected, even those without symptoms, so we know exactly where it's going and when it's going to be there.
He said it's going to get much worse before it gets better, unfortunately, now. What do you make of that?
I mean, Dr. Birx said that again, I think, in March, as far as testing goes.
It's going to get much worse before it gets better, was one of the things he said during that press conference yesterday. And more testing. Again, more tests. This is the same criticism. Well, not criticism, just truth. These are truths. These are just statements of fact. We're administering more tests faster and at a higher volume than any place else on Earth, and we're also more highly populated than most places on Earth. So do the math. When you have a giant population of people and you're rapid-fire testing all those people as fast as you can, and we know that this virus spreads rapidly, the CDC said itself, that there are probably 10 times more positive cases out there than we could possibly count. Guess what you're going to find? You're going to find there are more people that are positive. but it doesn't mean symptomatic. It doesn't mean dead. It doesn't mean near death. It doesn't mean even sick. It means nothing more than a positive test. That's all it means. It doesn't mean anything. Cases. There are more cases. We're exploding in cases. All right. So, at any rate, coming up, the McCloskeys in St. Louis with the guns. Remember them? Cam Edwards from BearingArms.com on the latest.
You live here. He lives here.
Well, my 90 has me for good now. I, like the other caller, used to listen to you on that other station.
Chris, so glad you're back on the air. You're the best in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I enjoy your show very, very much.
Great show as usual.
Hey, good morning, Chris.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris Stegall on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
So I just got back from Missouri. I think I told you I'm on vacation for a couple weeks with my family back from my home state, where there's a real governor who actually governs like a real governor should. And that is, let people have their rights and their autonomy and their individualism and let people make individual decisions for themselves. Governor Parson, the Missouri governor who made news for in one interview saying, one, shocker, kids should be back in school. And guess what? Some of them will probably get sick. And when they do, they'll go home and get well. And we're still going to have school. That totally overshadowed, because we're in such a hyper wacko environment about COVID. It totally overshadowed, I think, what is maybe more significant news. The fact that he said he's going to step in and defend the McCloskeys, or pardon the McCloskeys, I guess, who are now being charged legally in St. Louis County. Cam Edwards, our old pal from BearingArms.com. He hosts 40 Acres and a Fool, the podcast. He's back with us to talk about this McCloskey case because he has a unique take on it that nobody else has, and he studies firearms and Second Amendment right issues. And Cam, first of all, welcome back. Thanks for your time.
Oh, it's always good talking with you, Chris.
So the McCloskeys, you and I talked about at the time, it turns out we learned more about them. They happen to be, I think, as a partisan matter, they're pretty loyal Democrats, as I understand. And the guy, Mr. McCloskey, is an attorney who's even represented Black Lives Matter, which kind of makes this ironic. Not that it really matters in the grand scheme of things as a citizen with rights, but we now know the Black Lives Matter movement storms the gates, literally. Intimidates them, threatens to come onto their property, or does. They grab their firearms and, I'll acknowledge, uncomfortably wave them around. But they did, and it's their right. And the governor ultimately had to say, hey, if any trouble comes their way legally from it, I'm willing to stand up for them. And legal trouble did come. What exactly happened there?
Yeah, so after several weeks of investigation, St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner ends up filing charges Monday afternoon. Felony unlawful use of a weapon, as well as, I believe, a misdemeanor charge as well. So it's interesting, Chris, because Gardner has said that she's willing to have the McCloskeys enter into a pretrial diversion, avoiding jail time, ultimately clearing their record, even if they're, you know, convicted, which to me just this is just more evidence that this is a politically motivated case. This is not about seeking justice. Very early on, even before charges were announced, Kim Gardner had weighed in on this case and had excoriated the McCloskeys. Then you had people like President Trump get involved and defend the McCloskeys. Brad Parson, the governor of Missouri, as you mentioned, U.S. Senator Josh Hawley, and now the Attorney General Eric Schmidt in Missouri has stepped in as well. He is seeking to intervene in this case. That announcement came about an hour or so after Kim Gardner issued a release saying, yes, we are charging the McCloskeys. Then the attorney general said, well, I'm stepping in because I don't think there is a case here. I think this is a politically motivated prosecution, and I want this case tossed. So from a legal perspective, this, you know, relatively minor charge, it is a felony-level offense, but in the grand scheme of things, this is a nonviolent possessory offense, has gotten a great deal of attention from the White House on down. And I would be shocked, honestly, if this case actually goes to trial. I just think it's incredibly disappointing that Kim Gardner brought charges in the first place. This is just, to me, a clear example of not justice, but Lady Justice, you know, lifting up her blindfold and peeking a little bit to see who's standing in front of her.
I was going to say, is there any, Cam, at all? I mean, you know, backwards and forwards and more intimately than anybody I know, you know the laws of the land on guns. Is there any scenario in which you think they've run afoul of the law, what the McCloskeys did during that incident?
I mean, based on what we know, no, I don't think so. You know, these protesters had come into a private neighborhood. They had burst through a gate that was locked. There were hundreds of them. The McCloskeys remained on their private property. But these protesters were trespassing the entire time as they were walking down that private street. And keep in mind, Chris, you know, this came at a time when St. Louis had been gripped with riots and looting for the previous couple of weeks. There were lives that were lost. David Dorn, a retired St. Louis police captain, was murdered as he was trying to defend a pawn shop where he worked. And several individuals came in to loot that place. They ended up shooting and killing David Dorn. So there were acts of violence, not just against property, but against people in St. Louis, in that same time period. In fact, the day after the McCloskeys defended themselves and their property, there were a number of individuals who were praying at a statue of St. Louis, St. Louis, the French king that's in downtown St. Louis. They were assaulted. They were attacked by individuals. And Kim Gardner, frankly, waited for weeks and weeks to charge anybody with that crime as well. So, you know, they were operating and living in a city in which the police response was slim to none. In fact, when the McCloskeys called, it took quite a while for the police to arrive. And you have, you know, hundreds of individuals coming through an area where they're not supposed to be. They're yelling at the McCloskeys. The McCloskeys say that they were threatened, that one individual held up two ammunition magazines, kind of clacked them together, pointed at the McCloskeys. So I think Kim Gardner is going to have a very difficult time, if this case were to go to trial, convincing a jury that it was unreasonable for this couple to be in fear of their life and in fear for their property. I think any reasonable resident of the city would be in fear at that point.
Cam, what is the, I mean, it's not something I've done or do, and I forgive the ignorance because there may be gun owners aplenty listening to me right now who can't even believe my ignorance in asking this question, but I'll ask it anyway. I was just talking to a guy today who lives in Northeast Philadelphia who, you know, the violence that plagued Northeast Philadelphia and Philadelphia proper, like so many of the other large cities recently, and he was interested in buying a firearm to not only protect his own property, but some neighboring businesses. And he and some other neighbors ended up quite literally on shift watch of neighboring businesses and their neighborhoods sitting on their front porches with their firearms in their lap, you know, loaded and ready to go if necessary. Mm-hmm. That, and that's the way it was for a stretch of time in Philadelphia and towns like it all over the country. Do you fundamentally have a problem with that, with the kind of the attitude of we got to be, you know, locked and ready to go because the cops may not or will not come here, so it's up to us? Where are, I mean, you are somebody who I know values the Second Amendment, but you're also all about gun safety and rights and all of those things. So where do you come down on that?
Yeah, you know, I come down on the side of you do have a right to protect your life and your property. Although, you know, depending on what state you live in, that right to protect your life may not extend to your property, unfortunately. So I think it's incumbent on all gun owners to know what the law is, right? And going back to the McCloskeys for a second, you talked about their gun handling. You know, look, I too wish that the McCloskeys would have kept their firearms at the low ready position. I don't necessarily agree with the waving around of the firearms.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, did they have a right to protect themselves? Yes. Under Missouri's Castle Doctrine, you know, you could make the case that they had the right to use deadly force at that point. Now, thankfully, no trigger was pulled. Nobody was injured. But when it comes to, you know, what we have seen over the past couple of months where, you know, buildings and not just buildings, but businesses, people's businesses, their livelihoods are destroyed in an instant or an evening. I think it is absolutely understandable if there is not going to be a police response, and if the police who promised to protect and serve the community aren't there to protect and serve those neighborhoods, I think it is human nature that you're going to have individuals that do that for themselves. And I don't consider simply, you know, standing in front of a business to protect it from being looted, I don't consider that to be vigilantism.
Yeah, it is. Gardner's statement says it is illegal to wave firearms at peaceful protests. That's part of her statement is why she's bringing charges. It is illegal to wave firearms at a peaceful protest. So, you know, do you fundamentally disagree with that statement? I mean, I guess if that were what this was, And mm-hmm. and it, but that's not what this was. Is that a proper framing of what they were up against there?
I don't think it is, and I don't think the McCloskeys believe that that was the case. You know, again, at that point, you're talking about people who are trespassing. McCloskeys say that threats were made to them. And you don't have to, and I guess I'd like to turn that around on Kim Gardner and ask, you know, what are you supposed to do then when hundreds of people break down a gate into your private community? They are, you know, chanting at you. They are yelling at you. They are threatening you. Are you supposed to cower in your home? Are you supposed to, run in and lock the doors and barricade yourself inside? Is that what you recommend?
And Cam, isn't a peaceful protest, it's not like the McCloskeys went to downtown St. Louis where there was a parade and they were waving the firearms around. This was their home, their street. You know, that's a different setting. It's, indiscriminately waving firearms around on the street, different context than in your neighborhood, right?
And on your front lawn.
And on
absolutely.
Your lawn, yeah.
And as for those protesters, it's kind of forgotten now, but the reason why they were in that neighborhood to begin with is they were actually trying to cut through on their way to the mayor's home where they were demonstrating. And the mayor's home has been vandalized several times over the past couple of weeks, according to the Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt. And they were angry at the mayor because she had, during a Facebook live stream, had said the names and addresses of several individuals who had written her demanding a defunding of the police department. So this mob was incensed at the mayor, saying that the mayor had doxxed these individuals, had put their lives in danger, and so they were coming after the mayor at that point. This was not a protest against police brutality. This was not a protest for some sort of justice. This was an angry mob that had called on the mayor to resign. The mayor had refused to do so, and so they were going to her house. And they just got sidetracked by the McCloskeys.
Let me close by asking you about gun purchases, gun sales. This same gentleman that I told you about went to a firearms dealer here in Philadelphia, sold out, could not purchase the firearm he wanted. They had no inventory. He ended up having to drive to, like, central Pennsylvania to find one, mm-hmm. and what was ordinarily a $900 rifle ended up being about $1,500. Sheer supply and demand. There's a run, a huge run right now, and from what I'm told from gun dealers and sellers, that's the case. They can't keep supply in stock. So what you, who are an enthusiast, BearingArms.com, how do you read that? Does that make you feel good, unnerved? What do you think?
A little of both, honestly. On the one hand, I'm glad that we are seeing so many Americans embrace their right to keep and bear arms. From what we're hearing anecdotally from gun store owners, about 40 to 50% of their customers are first-time gun buyers. On the one hand, I'm glad to see Americans embracing the right to keep and bear arms. I wish it was not under these circumstances. But, thinking a little long-term, I am a little unnerved by this because, there was a story yesterday out of Arkansas, and one gun shop owner talked about how there's a multi-headed monster that is causing these shortages. And it's not just firearms, it's ammunition, which I think is even more concerning. So not only do we have, record high gun sales in part because of the unrest that we're seeing in the streets, but the coronavirus is still, wreaking havoc in terms of the materials that are needed. Specifically when it comes to ammunition. So a lot of our copper we get from Chile. And right now the copper mines, they're the two biggest ones. There's a possibility of a strike, actually. And they've been working with skeleton crews because of the COVID cases down in Chile. So, the materials that are needed to make not only firearms but ammunition are becoming harder and harder to find. And that is not something that is going to get solved right away.
Wow.
So, I'm getting a little concerned that as we head into the fall and into the winter months here, that you're going to see, as hard as it is to find firearms on the shelf, it's going to become nearly impossible to find all but even the common calibers of self-defense ammunition. Like already, Chris, it's really difficult if you've got, some sort of exotic caliber. Good luck restocking your ammo right now because all of the producers have now switched to 9mm, .223, .45 ACP, the real common calibers.
Mm-hmm.
But if they can't get the materials, then even that availability is really, really going to be scarce in just a few months. So, yeah, this is, you know, long term, I've got some pretty big concerns about how easy it's going to be for Americans to exercise their right to keep and bear arms, even if Joe Biden doesn't win in November.
Wow. Well, that's something new to worry about. Thanks a lot, Cam.
Sorry.
No, look, you speak the truth. That's why we reached out. BearingArms.com, the 40 Acres and a Fool podcast as well. And by the way, anywhere else people can read, I know you do some work with my colleagues and friends at PJ Media and Town Hall. Anything we need to look for from you?
Yeah, you know, I would also say every day we do the Bearing Arms Cam and Company podcast. You can find that on YouTube if you subscribe to Town Hall Media. Or if you just search, you know, your favorite podcast platform for Bearing Arms Cam and Company. It's a daily show, about a half hour, where we take a look at the big Second Amendment news and information. We generally have a guest. Today we're talking with Town Hall senior columnist Marina Medvin about the McCloskey case. She's a trial attorney as well as a senior columnist there. So, yeah, be sure to check that out Monday through Friday if you're interested in Second Amendment news and information.
That's at townhall.com. Great talking to you,
sir.
Cam. Thank you so much for your time today, my friend.
Always great talking with you as well, Chris. Look forward to doing it again soon.
7:18 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Take us with you on your phone. Download the free AM 990, The Answer app at 990theanswer.com.
You see Gabe Kapler, former Phillies manager, making big news as the first sports manager to take a knee earlier this week. Do you think Major League Baseball has enough goodwill left to be taking knees in the midst of this pandemic? Out of curiosity, can I just open the phone here real quick? Because we got Pat Toomey coming up, who actually had a roundtable with Major League Baseball, I guess, at least the Pirates and the Phillies, right, on the way forward with COVID. We're going to talk with them here in just a little bit. But I got a couple of minutes here, and I wanted to open the phone, 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. How do you see this playing out? Major League Baseball, 60 games, I think they've landed on, 60 regular season games or something, an abbreviated season.
Yep.
Phillies start Friday. We talked to Brazier about that. John Brazier from the Phillies earlier. The Phillies take a knee. Do you care? If any of the Phillies do you care? Some of them will, you know. I don't know who, but one of them will, I've got to believe. Do you care? The big news was the San Francisco Giants, a good few of them. I wouldn't say all of them. I wouldn't even say half of them, but a handful of them, along with Gabe Kapler, took a knee during the national anthem. Gabe said, "I did that because I wanted the players to know that I wasn't pleased with the way our country has handled police brutality." And I guess I just wonder, is there enough goodwill for our, what they used to call national pastime, that people are willing to overlook it? 610-850-0990, I just love your thoughts, if you have any. Like, are you just so desperate for a distraction and something else to do that you're like, whatever, I'm just glad baseball's back, whatever, I'll just ignore it. La, 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 plug my ears, cover my eyes if it bothers me. Maybe it doesn't bother you at all. I don't know. I'm just curious. I already know what it's done to the NFL, and that was in normal times pre-COVID. So now we're in the middle of the pandemic and a shortened season, and people are frayed and exhausted and want a distraction, and now we kneel. So 610-850-0990 is my number, and I have no, like, I got to be honest with you. There were people that used to demand, you've got to stop talking about the NFL. You've got to stop watching the NFL when guys knelt before. And I didn't. And, you know, I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan. They won the Super Bowl. I was elated. Like, that's the thing that I have shared with my dad and my kids for a long time. It means a lot to me. It is hard for me to turn my back on it because it's something that unifies my family and allows multiple generations to spend time together. It hurts me deeply that these guys cannot find a way to speak about whatever issue they want outside of the playing field, outside of where they play. I wish there was a way they could respect all the fans and just leave this stuff for a different venue and a different time. I don't begrudge anybody for speaking out. I don't. and I don't care how radical their position is. I just wish the country is desperate for something, anything, to rally around. And these jackasses have chosen an abbreviated 60-game stretch where we're desperate for something to rally around as a country and distract us. They've chosen this as an opportunity to continue to shove politics in our face. And I just can't help but wonder what the reaction to that ultimately is, if any. Maybe nothing.
It annoys me personally, but I don't want this to sound bad, but I mean, I don't really care enough.
You don't care enough.
That's fine.
I think that may be the way a lot of people react. I don't care. Whatever. It's the national anthem. I'm going to stand and I'm not really paying attention to them, and it's the ball game and it doesn't impact the ball game, so whatever. I like watching the ball game. I don't care what they do for the national anthem.
Plus, like, I'm not supporting them. Like, I'm not buying, you know, if anything, I'm going to buy from a street vendor down in South Philly instead of buying inside the stadium.
Well, that's what I've been accused of before, that if you stand with this, you're standing with that. If you continue to watch it and you cheer for it and you tune in and you buy the hot dogs and the, you know, you're supporting and aiding people
right.
who are disrespecting the country and the flag. That's what I've been accused of in the past when this was an NFL issue alone. So 610-850-0990 before we talk to Pat Toomey. I'm just curious, and there is no wrong answer. I'm not even going to argue with you. Like, you may feel exactly like Eddie. I'm going to watch baseball anyway. I really don't care what these guys do. 610. By the way, as a personal matter, I like as a personal just interaction, I think Gabe Kapler is an exceptional guy. I really liked him very much, and he's a very impressive guy. Setting aside baseball management, he was a very nice professional guy. And I think this is largely just a pandering move to ingratiate himself with his players. That's what he did here. Tried to suck up to the players, make them like him. I mean, that's the one aspect of this guy's personality that irks me, and trying to be liked. It's just so clear. Like me, guys. Hey, fellas, I'm on your side. I'll kneel. Whatever. I'll do whatever I got to do. You like me? I'm one of you. Hey, everybody, I'm just one of you. 610-850-0990. Just curious if you have an opinion. Will the Phillies taking a knee irk you? Will it cause you to turn off this abbreviated season? Will you still watch them on Comcast? Or will you go, nope, I'm out. You take a knee, I'm out. Because that was what a lot of you felt about the NFL. I don't know that ultimately you did that with the Eagles. Then there's DeSean Jackson. Mein Kampf. My gosh, that guy. The Jews. Hello, Nation of Islam. He took that to a whole new level. Like, DeSean Jackson's screed about the Jews, you know, made kneeling look like patty cake. Wow.
Yeah.
610-850-0990. Do you have room for sports in your life anymore? Or you just say to hell with it now. I don't know. In King of Prussia, it's Lee. Hi, Lee.
Good morning. I'd love to see them all take a knee if they're going to get down there and pray.
Right. Wouldn't that be lovely?
It would be, but I bet they would toss that right off the screen and there would be riots again because that's not allowed.
Does it bug you? Do you tune out? Do you say, or did you ever watch it to begin with? That matters too. Like, if you were never a sports fan, it doesn't, you know, it's a little easier to avoid.
We don't watch it anymore because it's all political now. You can't do your basic job, which was go play some sports. You have to drag your personal feelings into everything. Well, what is it going to be next?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, really, you're going to go from one topic to another to tell me what you think and what you feel and what you want. Selfish, arrogant, conceited, and well-paid. So these people have got a lot of nerve.
Yeah, and it's at a time that a lot of people's disposable income has taken a terrible hit, too. You know, it's like they fought and they fought and they fought over money just to get to a point of an abbreviated season. And then when we finally get here, and the country's just desperate for something else to pay attention to, and immediately it's politics again. And I don't know what the long-term maybe nothing. Maybe people are just so excited for the return of something they'll overlook anything. I don't know. That might be you. 610-850-0990 if you want to weigh in. Pat Toomey around the corner. My old friend Katie Failinger is back at 8 o'clock. Not with the weather, with a new book. Drops today called My Happy Place, How I DIY'd My Own Bliss. She's one of these ladies that just said, to hell with my job, I hate it, I'm out, and started a new career. I'll talk to her about it.
Good morning, it's Sebastian Gorka. You'll need lots of stimulation at the other end of your workday, so join me this afternoon at 3 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Coming up, we're also going to talk with State Representative Greg Rothman at 8:30. He has brokered a meeting between the Restaurant and Lodging Association and the Liquor Control Board, the state of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, rolling back restrictions on bars and restaurants. If you own or operate or know somebody who does that owns a small tavern or bar, what a nightmare of a time it's been to try to do that and navigate the rules and regs that have been on again, off again in Pennsylvania. So, we've been following how these restaurants and bars particularly have been trying to navigate this with the rules on food and whatnot. And we'll talk with Greg Rothman about how they're doing that in just a minute or two. Let me get Mike in here in Springfield in the meantime. Mike, good morning.
Hi, Chris. Your show makes me stay happy and informed, Chris.
Well, thank you very much. That means a lot. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Listen, the Phillies, I think, do the anthem twice. One, the first time is for the guests. And then a second time during the seventh-inning stretch. I think the fans ought to fight back by they should do kind of like a karaoke, put the words up on the screen, get them singing, and it will overshadow any player getting onto the knee if the fans start singing it.
That's an interesting thing, fans versus players kind of thing. By the way, to be clear, I don't know. I mean, the Phillies have not officially started their season yet. They do on Friday, so I don't know about this knee business. The Reds players, a couple of them took knees yesterday. Senator Toomey was talking baseball yesterday.
Thank you to our panelists. Thank you very much for taking the time to participate in this unique discussion at this really interesting moment. I think we all know that the COVID-19 pandemic has affected probably just about every facet of American life. I've used a series of roundtables like this one to examine a number of related issues, like how we can safely begin to reopen our economy while we protect vulnerable citizens. Another on getting a better understanding of the issues that affect small business in Pennsylvania. And most recently, how to safely resume youth activities, especially Little League baseball and softball.
So that was the purpose of his roundtable yesterday. He met with members of both, I think, the Pirates and the Phillies, and he joins us now. Senator Toomey, good morning.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me.
What came out of yesterday? Did you learn anything new?
It was a great discussion. it was not a headline-generating kind of thing, but I was very interested to hear Rhys Hoskins talk about the morale of the players. What's the attitude in the clubhouse? Or how do people feel about the change in the rules and just the strange circumstances? And, he was basically upbeat. He said, yeah, there's been some apprehension, but guys are looking forward to playing ball, and everybody's taking the protocols very seriously, and we're looking forward to getting started. Ben Cherington, the general manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates, confirmed that the Pittsburgh Stadium might just be home to the Toronto Blue Jays, who are not going to be allowed to play in Canada.
Now, is that because their fans don't come anymore? Is it?
No.
Having a little fun. I went to that stadium a couple of years ago for the very first time. It's a gorgeous stadium, but sadly, absolutely, very, very empty.
There is some truth to that. but I think the main dynamic here is relatively few overlapping home games.
Yeah.
So it could work. There are some, and so they'd have to work that out, and it's not definitive. But anyway, we had a discussion about that. We had a discussion about the protocols that are meant to keep players safe. I raised the question of are you guys planning for the day, hopefully soon, when fans can go back to the stands? Because, this one thing's pretty obvious about the ballpark. It's a big place.
Right.
Spread out. If people can go to the supermarket, which of course they can and do and should, they can sit several seats apart and you could put thousands
of
people.
Hey, if you were King Toomey now, would you say fans go back to the ballpark at your own risk kind of a thing, but let's do it?
I'd probably want to work out some kind of protocols for distancing. So you wouldn't sell out the stadium, but you'd decide, are you going to occupy every third seat or every other seat or something like that, require a mask. And of course, if you are a 78-year-old person with emphysema, you should not go.
Right.
But if you're a 32-year-old healthy person, you're almost certainly going to be fine. So, yeah, I do think we ought to be getting back to normal in these respects.
Senator, pivoting to something more serious, I spoke yesterday with one of the commissioners from Lebanon County, who I know you've spoken with as well, Bob Phillips, I believe. Yeah. And Commissioner Phillips, his story is so chilling and alarming to me, and I've been pounding it here, even though I realize in this listening audience it doesn't really apply. Money, federal money, congressional approved and appointed money for aid to Pennsylvanians is not getting to the citizens of Lebanon County because the governor, Tom Wolf, doesn't like the way the Republican commissioners made decisions about the way forward for that county. So he says to the residents of Lebanon County, maybe you should think twice about who leads your county commission in the future. Look, all I know is if Donald Trump said something like that, I'm withholding aid, I'm withholding money, it would be a barn burner of a story. But nobody's even talking about the fact Tom Wolf just politically threatened a county. Pennsylvanian citizens you represent said you're not going to get federal money because your commissioners didn't behave.
Well, yeah, and it's not just a threat. He's withholding it.
Yeah.
There is a specific sum of money that is meant to be allocated to Lebanon County, and he is refusing to release it to the county. Yeah, it would be like President Trump saying, okay, so we've passed the CARES Act, but I've instructed the Treasury not to release any money to Illinois. Bunch of Democrats. Why would I send any money there?
Right.
I mean, well, like, wait a minute. So I do think it's very problematic. It's problematic that it's not even state money. I'm not sure that that wouldn't make it okay if it were, but it's federal money. And the governor was implicitly by the legislation, governors were deemed to be the appropriate custodians. And, we knew in Washington we weren't going to figure out, what's the right formula for every municipality and every county in America. Governors are much closer to that. So we left it to the discretion of the state governors. By the way, not necessarily explicitly the governors. I think state legislatures should have some say in this process, and of course in Pennsylvania that has not been the case. So this is problematic at several levels, Chris.
Can you make him? Have you spoken with him? Can you make him release that money?
No, I certainly can't make him do it. I've spoken with him several times. I haven't spoken with him about the latest development here, which we learned about last week with respect to Lebanon County. But part of the problem is the legislation gives a lot of leeway. I think it's fair to say we didn't contemplate a governor deciding that he was going to exact revenge on political opponents.
And this kind of speaks to it's funny. Somebody said to me yesterday that I respect, a conservative, a lot, who said, Donald Trump sending federal law enforcement into cities like Portland, all that does is clear the way for Democrats to behave similarly when they're in control again. And I have to say, and you may ideologically disagree with me on this, I think the Democrats are going to do what they damn well please. They always have and they always will, and I don't think any good behavior or role modeling by Republicans is going to change that.
Well, so let's unpack that a little bit. I'm not sure that we should consider it bad behavior for the president to send federal officers to protect federal property.
Right.
The federal government has every right to do that. And when a municipality and a state is deciding, no, lawless riots are fine, we're not going to protect our citizens, we're not going to protect the property in this area, at some point I think the president has to step in.
So I don't know that it applies to Philadelphia, but he did, the president, invoke Philadelphia, which then caused the mayor to say, hey, we don't have any problem here, you leave us alone, butt out. So, I mean, I don't know what he means in terms of Philadelphia, but if, in fact, what we saw, the chaos of last month in Philadelphia, you would support the president's actions there.
Look, I certainly hope it doesn't come to that, and it doesn't have to come to that. I think if the police get the political support that they deserve from the mayor, if we have a district attorney who makes it clear that people are going to be prosecuted for breaking the law, that criminality is actually not okay, if we have serious respect for the rule of law, then I don't think this spirals down to the point where we get anywhere near needing to call out federal reinforcement, so to speak. I think the Philadelphia police and the assets that are at the disposal of the governor more than enough to keep the peace. But you have to have people who are willing to enforce the law.
What do you make politically? You're a politically savvy guy, and I'm really trying to honestly assess what's going on politically. It's very clear to me when we talk about coronavirus that the president, I think, had hoped, I think the White House had hoped that we had kind of turned a corner on it. They stopped doing the daily briefings. Then all the chaos and the riots started happening. And it seemed like coronavirus quite literally vanished for a period of time as a news item. And then all of a sudden, when the cities slowed down and things settled down and calmed down and the protests and the violence and the riots all ended, roaring back came the story of coronavirus. And it got whipped up, and there's more panic and hysteria about it than ever before. Cases, cases, cases every day were being treated to it. And the president decided we're going to reinstate the coronavirus press briefing starting last night. And during that, he said it's going to get worse before it gets better. Is this the thing? It's clear that Biden is hanging his hat. After 4 years of this administration, they've decided this is their pathway. This is basically the top of the ticket, coronavirus. It's not Biden. Am I reading this right? This is what they think they're going to beat Trump on.
Well, the short answer is yes. I think, you know, if you go back and look at where we were in January of this year with the strongest economy of our lifetimes, record low unemployment, record wage gains, a narrowing of the income gap. I mean, my goodness, things were good. In fact, it doesn't get much better than that, right?
Right.
And that's the environment that, we had no way of knowing that that was going to be turned upside down. And that's an environment that's really good for a sitting president. The coronavirus is what came along and just totally derailed the train. And I think this is going to be the message for the Democrats, and they're going to drive it hard.
So are you guys boxed in now on this aid thing? I mean, I heard that Senator McConnell basically said he supports more aid. You know, Steve Moore, our friend who we talk with weekly, he said, you know, we just cannot continue these wealth transfer payments, paying people more to sit out on the sidelines than go to work. I know you feel the same way, but are Republicans boxed in now where we got to continue to pay people 50 grand a year to just not go to work?
Yeah, no is the short answer. Look, something's going to pass, is extremely likely, but I think you're going to see for the first time since this series of legislative measures to deal with this, I think this next one is going to have a significant number of Republican defections. I think there are a number of us who think, okay, after actually spending $3 trillion, authorizing the Fed to lend another $3 trillion, after throwing so much money at this, I mean, it's 30% of America's annual total economic output. That's how much money we have lobbed at this problem, including an awful lot of money that's gone to people. I mean, think about the direct payments to people who never were out of work.
Right.
But think of all the federal employees. They never missed a check, and yet one day $1,200 shows up in their bank accounts. Very nice.
Yeah.
But how really? We're going to just keep doing this?
Yeah.
So, look, there are some things that I think are necessary and sensible, but I'm afraid that we're on a path where this thing is going to the price that Speaker Pelosi is going to demand is going to be very, very hard to defend. So I haven't made a decision yet because we don't know what the final deal is going to look like, but I'm really concerned about where we're heading.
So when McConnell says we definitely need another shot in the arm, what does that mean to you? Do you agree? And what does that mean exactly, if so?
I don't really agree. I think there's some things that we ought to be doing. There are technical things we should do to improve the PPP program, for instance. We certainly should provide liability protection for businesses and colleges and hospitals and workers that follow appropriate guidelines for keeping everyone safe. We ought to do that. There's probably some things we should do for hospitals. You know, we've advanced some funding to them, and they're required to pay it back very quickly and at a very high interest rate. You know, we could ease that burden. So I can think of a lot of little things to do, but gosh, another big round of direct payments to people who never lost any income. A whole lot of money to businesses that might be doing just fine. Some businesses are doing okay through all this, you know. So I'm skeptical.
I didn't get a chance to talk with you about this. To be very honest with you, I really don't care about it a whole lot, but I got to ask it anyway. It happened while I was away on vacation a couple weeks ago. I look down rarely at my phone while I'm away, and I see that the president's tweeted about you. And I thought, oh, boy, it's always a good day when the president's tweeting about you, isn't it?
Yeah.
He called you and Mitt Romney rhinos. You spoke out. You were not pleased about the pardoning of Roger Stone. You care to address that?
Well, I mean, look, it is what it is. I think it was a mistake for the president to commute the sentence of Roger Stone. First of all, the whole Hurricane Crossfire episode is very, very disturbing. There's no question that senior people at the FBI were knowingly lying, falsifying documents, and it was a politically motivated exercise. And when that is meant to spy on an American presidential campaign, that's a huge problem. So I've been very clear about it. I think there's people at the FBI who need to get probably need to go on trial and should go to jail. That said, it is not the case that someone who's tangentially related to that is prosecuted, is convicted of 7 different crimes, that all of that should be wiped clean simply because of what was wrong with Crossfire Hurricane.
Yeah, 2 things can be true to me. I hate the way Roger Stone was treated. In some ways, it was even worse in the immediate than Michael Flynn. But acting like Roger Stone and Michael Flynn are the same guy, they're not the same case, not by a lot.
Not at all. And by the way, I think Michael Flynn should be pardoned. He has not been convicted of anything. The prosecutorial discretion that ought to be afforded to the Justice Department, as it is in every other case, they recognize that he should not be prosecuted. We know we had a case of entrapment. We had a coerced plea because they were threatening to go after his son. I mean, there's just a lot of reasons that Michael Flynn is a very different case. I think he should be pardoned. But Roger Stone went in before a Republican committee and just started lying, and he was convicted of that. That's a problem.
I know that you and the president's relationship is, we'll put it at this, complicated. What will be your role, if anything, in his attempt to win Pennsylvania again?
Look, I'm supporting the president. That's where I am.
Won't be barnstorming Pennsylvania with him. Is that safe to say?
I don't know. You know, I've been with the president on many occasions. We actually get along fine. You know, he's a little sensitive to criticism. You may be shocked to learn, Chris. I don't think this gets in the way of a very constructive working relationship that we've had for, his entire presidency.
Yeah. Well, look, and again, let's not ignore the fact that, you come on shows like this, you make yourself available, so does he. And the one thing you both share in common is you're accessible to people who do criticize you. Whereas Joe Biden, for instance.
Thank you for listening. I look forward to having your questions at another time, but I'm off to another event.
It's another event in a different part of his basement, I think.
The guy doesn't take questions. Like, for whatever you criticize, you or Trump, like, you both show up. This guy doesn't show up for anything. It's amazing.
I know.
All right. Senator Toomey, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
You live here. He lives here.
Hey, Chris, thanks for being there and everything you do on a daily basis. We really appreciate it.
Chris, I agree with your other callers. You are a godsend.
You have a mixture of sense of humor, intelligence, and godliness. You are the answer.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. Haven't even spoken to her, to be very honest with you, in, I guess, several months. She's been busy. I've certainly been busy. So this is actually literally the first time we've spoken in months and months since we both got new gigs. We used to work together. over there across the street, as they say. She was a meteorologist for years and years in the mornings on CBS 3. You probably remember Katie Failinger. You probably saw her, even if you didn't know that on my old radio show, she used to do the weather with me every morning. Well, Katie has taken on a brand new lot in life. She's a proud mama and wife, but she really wasn't pursuing her passion, she learned about herself over the years. And so she's written it in a brand new book. She struck out on a new professional path. And today her new book goes on sale, My Happy Place, How I DIY'd My Own Bliss. Reunited, it feels so good. Ladies and gentlemen, Katie Failinger. Good morning, Katie.
Hello. You took the words literally right out of my mouth. Reunited.
How are you, friend?
I miss you so much.
I miss you too.
You're right. Like we haven't talked in, I'd really have to look at a calendar to figure out, but it's been months. So
too
it's
long.
So nice to talk to you again. I miss you.
I do too. And you know, by the way, I should say off the top, I'm going to make you the featured player on the podcast today so that we can spend some more time going into, you know, deep detail and maybe do a little dishing off the air.
I love it.
About some things.
I love it.
But for now, with kind of the more limited time we have, tell people your story, because I must say, Christine's read your book, my wife Christine, and she told me things that she's read in your book, which I have not yet read, that kind of surprised me. I don't think I understood mm-hmm. all the years I worked with you how much you really were not happy at the work you did. I mean, you're on TV. You can't be a sad sack. I get it. But you really did not like the gig.
Yeah. So it's interesting because there's so much to unpack. It's really hard to tell the whole story in a short amount of time. But the long and short of it was that I had what I think appeared to be an existence that looked really great on paper. You know, this job at its face value looked really glamorous, where I'm getting dressed up every day and I'm on TV and wearing makeup every day. And it looks like it's this amazing gig. But even though I really, truly enjoyed the core tenets of what I did every single day, there were so many other things that were outweighing the good stuff for me. One of the biggest things was the schedule, because I was waking up against anybody's natural rhythm in the middle of the night, and also trying to care for tiny twins at home, and also trying to keep up this persona of being happy all the time when I just wasn't. So things started to snowball from there in my physical health, in my mental health especially, to the point that I kept shrugging it off and trying to distract myself with reasons why maybe it was all in my head or whatever. And I got into this slump that was so low that I finally had to address the problem medically and sought help from a doctor because of it. It got bad.
And was it an official diagnosis of some kind, or you weren't happy?
Well, I think at its core, it was really that I needed to make a huge life shift. Mm-hmm. At the time, however, what I figured out with my doctor and what we agreed on was that I was suffering from essentially PMS on steroids. There is a disorder called premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which is essentially, again, PMS, but ramped up to the next level, where your emotions are so, like, they're swinging on such a pendulum that there's literally nothing you can do to rein it in. And all you really can do is medicate it. And the timing lined up. It was anywhere between 7 to 10 days before I would get my period, and I had a schedule that worked like clockwork, where I would get into these moods and be just completely miserable all day for literally no reason whatsoever. So my doctor put me on antidepressants for a couple of days out of the month. At this point, though, now that I've made this change and I'm living on my own terms and making my own schedule and my own rules, and I've got control of my life again, I haven't had to take a pill in months. So there's something to be said there for the need I had to make this life-altering choice, which, don't get me wrong, was the scariest thing I've ever done in my life. But it was the most rewarding and liberating thing I've ever done at the same time.
Katie Failinger is my guest. Her brand new book is My Happy Place, How I DIY'd My Own Bliss. I talked to you for years. We were friends for years. You came on the show mm-hmm. live every day. You came on live in between your television hits with us and talked. And I think I had a sense, and our conversations before, we never got down into the nitty-gritty about much, and I kind of hope we'll do that today a little bit. But I I guess I knew it wasn't the best gig, but mornings are tough anyway. And I always thought, well, it just sucks to. So would it have been different if you were, you know, I don't know, doing afternoon or evening weather? Do you think you'd still be on TV if it were just a different time of day?
That's a good question. I contemplated that actually quite a bit because the schedule sucks. Like, there's no way around
awful.
That. The schedule is terrible. And I don't think I certainly just wasn't cut out for it. There are certain people I think that tolerate it better than others. But
well, and then may I just add on top of that? Sorry to interrupt you, but on top of that, not only does the schedule suck and it goes against everything about your natural system, you got to get up and paint up and shellac yourself and then go on TV and and be treated to nothing but comments about how you look all damn day.
Yeah.
I don't know how that alone, how any human being weathers that.
Yeah, pun, very nicely placed pun on that one. but, you know, it's interesting because the way you put that actually leads really well into how I would respond to that. Because I got to tell you, Chris, like, one of my biggest frustrations with that job was, A, being controlled down to the length of my hair. I was not allowed to pick the lipstick colors I wore, the sleeve length that I wore, the colors that I wore, even the haircut that I got. I was told how to present myself. And I did not care for that arrangement one bit.
Yeah, I bet not.
So that's one part of it. But on top of it all, I think you know how much I cared about putting out the most accurate forecast to my audience. I really gave a you-know-what as to whether we were right or not.
Yeah, and let me say on this, I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but I have to say, just because I want people to know if they don't know, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, you were the least rhetorical, least hyperbolical, least sensational weather personality, meteorologist that I had ever met. Because in your business these days, your portion of a newscast is meant to drive an audience, and that typically does not rely on accuracy, rather sensationalism.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I like to tell people what I really thought was going to happen, which meant keeping it real and trying to explain what real impacts you're going to see. And of course, we got it wrong sometimes, but I really cared. I really, really cared whether I got it right or not, and it bothered me so much when we didn't. But what I realized in the grand scheme was that it really seemed to matter more that my hair was in place than whether my forecast was correct.
Yeah.
That was one of the most infuriating and frustrating things about that job for me. Because why would you bother going to get yourself a Bachelor of Science degree if at the end of the day, you really should have just gone to cosmetology school? Like, it was so frustrating in that regard. Like, I'm a scientist. Why does it matter whether my hair is falling the same length on one side as it is the other, when you really should be listening to the fact that there's going to be 6 inches of snow that you're going to need to shovel away before you can hit the road tomorrow morning?
Now, can I be honest with you about something? This is the God's honest truth, and I feel terrible about it if it's the case, and I want you to tell me the truth right now, please.
Okay.
Christine said that she read, and I don't know exactly what she was referring to, that you often, not just criticisms, but you felt that there were, you know, guys that would hurl sexist comments your way make inappropriate comments. Over the years, there were mornings that I would tell you on the air that you looked particularly terrific, that I would just, you look great today, I would say to you on the air. I mean, never anything. I didn't think sleazy. I didn't mean it to be sleazy. I said it publicly for all to hear. In retrospect, I wondered, did that upset you? Did that bother you?
Oh, no. No, I definitely not. This is a very, very gray area, as I'm sure you understand and well know. It's one of these things where who it's coming from, how it's being told to you, just the tone involved, all of those things matter as to whether or not someone will take that, you know, how someone is going to take that. I never took that kind of stuff that way from you. Because we're friends, because I know you, we go so far back, that was never an issue with you. So don't worry about that.
But there, yeah, but a guy saying, hey, you look great, versus, hey, you look great. There's a different, right? There's a, you know.
Exactly.
here's my hotel key versus, seeing you in passing. Right. There's a different deal. Yeah.
Well, it's also like, don't write me an email in all caps because I'm going to think you're yelling at me. But that's sort of what it boils down to. Yeah.
It's, okay. Well,
there's context. There's relationship involved there. Yeah. We know each other so long. I know where you're coming from. If it was a random stranger, like somebody just today on Instagram said, wow, your feet are really sexy. Like, what? I'm not sure how to process that one. But yeah. What?
That guy's got a different agenda.
Comes out of left field.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, you kind of know where people are coming from, or you at least get a vibe about people. But yeah. No, as far as you're concerned, that was never something.
Okay,
that
good. I was that purges me of my own guilt. I thought, oh, was I part of Katie Failinger's professional crisis? I don't want to be that guy. So now let's talk about where you've gone, what you've done. A lot of people said, I wondered what happened to Katie Failinger. Tell people what you're doing now.
Yeah, so, well, the book was the biggest thing that I've done since then. So once I left, which was middle of September last year, I started on this path of just entrepreneurship. So I decided that I wanted to write a book, I wanted to put out an online course, and I wanted to develop a presence as a public speaker, at least in my own right, because I was already doing some MC work and some speaking through my TV gig, but now I want to branch out and do this on my own and on my own terms, and actually try to get paid for it, too. So those are the main pursuits that I'm working on right now. The book is the first thing. It's sort of the first box to check off, if you will. The next thing is going to be this online course, which is all about video production, because even though I do have a meteorology degree, video is my first love and what I would consider my biggest strength. And I want to teach people that are amateur content creators how to be video production rock stars and create amazing content easily in their own homes and with inexpensive equipment. Because especially, if anything, COVID may have taught us as broadcasters, there's so much that's accessible for people these days to just do it themselves.
Yep.
So that's something that I want to teach in this course. It's basically going to be a comprehensive masterclass of all things video production and presentation.
People listening to me that think, oh boy, I really, they're driving into work today and they go, oh, I would love to just chuck my job and go do something else or, pursue my dream like Katie's doing. Here's another hurdle, I imagine. This is the kind of stuff I want to spend a little more time in on the podcast today. You come home and say to your husband, who I assume knows for a while you're struggling with just being miserable doing it, and you finally say, I can't, I'm out, I'm done. Is there any obviously there's finances. Whoa, you're just going to cut off the stream of, money that you're pulling. That's going to hurt. So I would imagine spouses become a big hurdle to people making life changes like this, or help, depending on their reaction.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Guarantee that's got to be something that comes into the conversation. I don't take for granted for one second how lucky I am. I have a true partner in my husband. He's my best friend. He's my biggest supporter, my number one shoulder to lean on. And, even though I completely agree that we should all be, we're deservedly given the right to be selfish with our own existence and how we move through this life, you still have to take reality into account and practicality. And
now, did Steve tell you to get out? You're miserable, just get out? Or did you say, I can't do it anymore, Steve? And he said, all right, fine. I mean, how did that go, really?
That was pretty, it was really the latter. He knew how frustrated I was because I would, despite me trying to put on this happy face at work, I would come home and cry to him. Like, a lot. This happened a lot. And he was the one that always had to shoulder the burden of my frustrations, and I would always come home and complain to him about things going on at work that were frustrating me, and countless were the times that I would cry when I would get home at 1 o'clock. So he knew that there was a lot happening there, but I was really nervous when I finally told him, I have to do something about this. I have to get out, because there's so many things that come into play with this. We have a mortgage to pay. We have mouths to feed. We have car payments and everything else. We have bills just like anybody else. And to lose an entire salary job and a 401k just like that was terrifying. And also a logistical nightmare. We really had to plan for this. So I started very seriously considering leaving my job 14 months before I did. I had a contract that was going to expire in September, and 14 months out, I decided, okay, steps need to be made here to figure this out. So I reverse engineered it. I figured out how much money we would need to stay afloat per month, how much I would have to bring in, or how we need to rearrange finances to make it work. So there was a lot of math that had to be done and a lot of rearranging of our accounts and finances and how we approached money for a long time. And we spent my last summer on the air essentially pretending that I didn't have an income. We relied solely on Steve and saw whether it would work. And thank God everything lined up and we were able to pull it off. But it was because of all that planning that we were able to actually make it all happen. So if you do feel stuck, you can get out, but you're going to need to work for it and you're going to need to plan a lot.
I cannot wait, and you've been generous enough with your time that you're willing to do this with me. I want to spend a lengthy bit of time with you on this subject because there are so many people who feel like you do and are trying to figure it out and try to find the new off-ramp, and I think you can go a long way to help. That's the reason you wrote the book, My Happy Place, How I DIY'd My Own Bliss. Katie Failinger, the brand new author. I'm so proud of you and happy for you and those beautiful little girls. If you follow her on social media, you see those beautiful little girls, probably a huge reason why you did what you've done here.
Absolutely true. Yeah. I mean, that was the thing that I felt like I was missing the most on because, you know, even though, again, at face value, I'd be home by 1 o'clock every day. It's like, great. I have a whole afternoon to hang out with my girls. The reality of it was I was so exhausted yeah. with a glaze over my eyes that whole time. I was too tired to just push them on the swing. Yeah. That devastated me. So, yeah, they were probably the biggest reason that I finally made this change, but there are a lot of others, and I do outline all of them in the book, and I would love for people to check it out.
Congratulations, sincerely. I am so proud. I hope I don't sound condescending when I say I'm just so damn proud of you. I had no idea that you were maybe as unhappy as you were. I understood it to a degree, but maybe not how much. And I'm just, this is inspiring to anybody listening, I hope, that's not happy where they are, that it can be figured out if you've got the will. Katie, thank you. Let's talk some more on the podcast today.
I'm all in.
There she is. So good to catch up with that kid again. I love her. Katie Failinger, CBS3. Formally, now, her very own presence. My Happy Place, How I DIY'd My Own Bliss. Join me on the podcast at chrisstigall.com a little later today. We're going to go in, we're going to dive a little deeper into some of the stories she and I might have on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. She's always worried about things like that. She says, baby, it's 3 a.m. I must be lonely. She says, baby, well, I can't help but be scared of it all sometime. And the rain's gonna wash away, I believe it. Coming up just after the break at 8:30, we'll talk with Pennsylvania State Representative Greg Rothman. He brokered a meeting with the Restaurant and Lodging Association and the Commonwealth, trying to figure out a way forward for these bars, restaurants, and taverns who have just been jerked around on how to continue to remain open and make a living. It's just been unfathomable if you run one of these places. I've heard from so many restaurateurs and bar owners who are just really struggling. And so anyway, Greg Rothman has an interesting, did I say that? Yeah, Greg Rothman, who I've not met and we haven't spoken with before, but he brokered this meeting, an important one, I think. And, you know, if you've got your favorite watering hole or your favorite restaurant, he or she that owns it, they're battling, man. I mean, it's tough. This kind of half capacity seating outside, I can't imagine what they're going through. And a lot of them aren't making it. I'll just say this. I happen to know it's a name you'd know in the restaurant business. I'll just put it to you that way. Who told me in no uncertain terms that this half capacity stuff and the fact that they don't have bars open and things like that, it's a crusher to a degree that I didn't understand. Obviously, I knew the math was less. I didn't realize how bad. I didn't realize the layoffs, the massive release of staff, and where those people go. Well, they've been collecting this pretty sweet fat Fed check for now. But that's the great debate. That's why I asked Pat Toomey in the last hour, like, can you Republicans now not? I mean, there are a lot of people, you probably know some of them, who have been laid off or aren't working, but they're getting a pretty sweet check, maybe even better than the one they were making working. And so right now they're like, yeah, it's, you know, I don't exactly miss work. I'm still getting the check. I mean, what human wouldn't? But at some point, that's going to run out. And then what? That's the thing. This economically, it's like this isn't over. This has been band-aided over. This has been bridged. This has been temporarily backfilled or whatever you want to call it. But eventually, these people that have been getting these transfer payments, it's going to stop. And they've got to go back to work. And to what will they go back to is the question. Will there be something to go back to? And nobody's thinking that way because everybody's like, I'm getting mine. Who cares? Yahoo! I mean, that's great short-term thinking.
Yeah, Toomey said that's what they've sent out already is 30% of our economic output per year. You think that's going to keep up?
That bill's coming. That bill will come due, and I don't know what that means or what it looks like. I'm no economist, but gulp. Let's go to Joe in Philadelphia. Hello, Joe.
Hey, good morning, Chris. I'm just wondering maybe if you could get an attorney or whatever to help out with this. There's something called sovereign immunity. You can't sue the king. I mean, you can't sue the mayor for hitting a pothole. You can't sue the DA for bringing a charge or the judge for the sentence. But when you get outside of that lane and start going 85 miles down the highway, that's when you can get pulled over. That's when you lose sovereign immunity. And what Dale is doing is he's misappropriating funds for political gain. That's personal. That makes him personally liable. And what I would do if I was the commissioners out in Lebanon, get an attorney and file a personal lawsuit against him for $163 million.
I like it.
And so science matters. And all Dale's been saying, Governor Wolf, is listen to the scientists.
Yeah, I will be very, very curious to know. You know, Toomey said I can't make him give it up. And we know that the commissioner said yesterday they're not going to be able to claw it back. It's here. It exists. It's kind of stuck. So how do you make him give it away now? Is it going to become litigious? And then which court hears it? Is it a federal court matter? The commissioner said it's probably both, a Commonwealth court and a federal court matter. So look, I'm going to keep watching it. I think it's a huge story. I mean, maybe nobody else in media does, but I think it's an enormously important story. Here's a disturbing story while we're at it. Did you hear George Stephanopoulos, the guy that anchors Good Morning America, the tiny, diminutive little fella who you can fit in a pocket? He hosts Good Morning America there with Robin Roberts. He used to work for Bill Clinton. Remember him? George Stephanopoulos. People get mad at me because I never say his name right, so I just say George Stephanopoulos. His wife's a woman named Allie Wentworth, an actress. I think she used to be a comic, and I feel like she was on something like In Living Color or something for a while when she was younger. I don't remember where I've seen her. For like a hot second, Allie Wentworth was a famous funny lady for like a minute or two. I don't know where. But anyway, she has she's given an interview to Deborah Messing, who you might know from Will and Grace.
Oh, Jesus.
Lunatic leftist wacko, Deborah Messing, who apparently does a podcast, because doesn't everybody. And during the podcast, Allie Wentworth, the wife of George Stephanopoulos, argued that since you can't stop your kids from watching pornography, parents should just consider watching porn with them to explain what's happening. She said that she would watch porn with her teenage daughters, Elliot, age 17, and Harper, age 15, at least once, in order to explain to them its performance and not realistic. In porn, the women have been conditioned to look and act a certain way. When asked how to stop kids from watching porn, you can't stop them. So I'd watch it with them, she said. I would look at the porn with them one time, and I'd explain, hey, they're performing. She said, I don't even recommend you try blocking porn on kids' devices. That just piques their curiosity. The kids are going to watch porn anyway, so why don't mom and dad sit down on the couch and watch it with them? Talk them through it. Explain what's happening. That's the wife of Good Morning America anchor George Stephanopoulos at 8:30. By the way, I didn't do this. She was so nice to give us this, and I didn't do it. So let me do it now. Caller 9, 610-850-0990, 610-850-0990. Our old pal Katie Failinger is going to autograph her brand new book to give it away to you. If you're caller 9 right now, 610-850-0990, you will get Katie Failinger's brand spankin' new read, My Happy Place, How I DIY'd My Own Bliss. Caller 9, 610-850-0990. Good luck on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. The words arbitrary and capricious. It's what executive edicts that have come from the Wolf administration through this pandemic have been, in large part. And in legal parlance, arbitrary and capricious is defined in court as damaging. And people often seek damages under that definition, that legal definition. Unsuccessfully, though, when you talk about politicians often. It's unfortunate. But there are people, nonetheless, that are still leading the fight out there. People like Pennsylvania State Representative Greg Rothman. He represents the 87th District of Pennsylvania, and he has brokered a meeting with the Restaurant and Lodging Association, trying to figure out a way forward for a lot of restaurateurs, bar owners, taverns, who have tried to figure out the stop-and-go, again, arbitrary and capricious nonsense rooted in the Wolf administration's edicts on how we go forward in this pandemic. Representative Rothman joins us now. Representative, thanks for your time this morning. Hi.
Hey, thank you, Chris, and good morning.
This industry, I'm sorry, go ahead, sir.
No, you're right, and you were talking about arbitrary and capricious. It also disqualifies enforcement of laws when it turns out that they're being arbitrary and capriciously enforced, administered, and you know, that's part of the issue, too, that the people of Pennsylvania are wondering, well, why is it only my competitors allowed to be open, but I'm not? And why can they do certain things and I can't? And why does Governor Wolf's family's business get to stay open, but my family business is closed? And it's like that with the restaurants now because, as you said, it changed, and that's the definition of capricious, changing.
I hear more from maybe tavern owners and bar owners than just about anybody else. Maybe the next are people that do hair. You know, certainly I've got friends who are dentists or car salesmen. They've all, you know, taken it on the chin at some point in this, or still are. But it's the tavern owner, the bar owner in particular, that's had to go through this kind of painful two-step of what is food and can I stay open? And the bar can't be open, but the table's half capacity. And you got people now buying hot dogs. And, you know, as long as there's a half-eaten hot dog in front of you, that qualifies as food. So, you know, where are we? Where does this stand with the poor people trying to make a buck on selling drinks and food in restaurants and bars across Pennsylvania?
Well, and by the way, you know, the providing of food should be a critical essential activity in Pennsylvania. I mean, before the pandemic, and I don't know if it's really changed, but the statistics are that over 50% of our meals are eaten outside of the home. So somebody's preparing it, somebody's serving you, someone's cooking it. What it does for the people who, you know, for their time, you know, time management, to have someone else cook your food. And the governor from the beginning said, oh, no, we're going to allow people to still buy alcohol. You're going to allow people to flood into grocery stores and convenience stores and fast food restaurants and drive-thrus, but for some reason the restaurants and taverns but are not allowed. And it's part of him being out of touch. I mean, he referred to the bars last week in his announcement as dive bars. I mean, as if some pejorative term for where the citizens of Pennsylvania that he's supposed to be representing go to spend their money, which then a big chunk of it goes back to the general fund to spend on the programs that we all want, that those establishments are dive bars. I think it's close to 600,000 people in Pennsylvania that work in the restaurant business somewhere or another. There's like 27,000 different establishments, and they're all being hurt by this. And 25% is ludicrous. And there's no rationale in it. There's no science or data behind it.
He said, I want to be clear on this. He called certain bars and established dive bars. He used that word.
Yeah. Well, he said the problem is the dive bars, and he shut down everything. Dive bars but shut down everything. So, you know, to me, that means that he thinks these places where people are, and I don't even know what that means. I mean, it's just such a pejorative.
Yeah, places he wouldn't deign to enter, I'm sure. Right.
Yeah, but that's part of his disconnect. He's so out of touch. I mean, completely out of touch that he thinks it's okay for him to march in protests where a guy was holding a sign behind him that said, "Blue Lives Murder." But that was okay for thousands of people to march together in protest, which, look, I support the protest. But yet a diner can't stay open with less than 25% capacity. It's again, he's so out of touch and has spent no time talking to the professionals in this industry. You know, the restaurant owners, they started taking steps to protect their employees and protect their customers in the beginning, as I think most businesses did. But they were never given a chance. No conversation. Hey, how would you do this? How would you make this work? We all want to make sure that we stop the spread, though. Even our hospitalization rates are still way below average as far as beds. And I just don't think the governor really cares about these people. And we're talking about 10% of our labor force.
This is clearly, this is sadly a lame duck guy who loves his power and doesn't intend to give it up. We'll pay no political price for it. So he really doesn't care. I mean, he just doesn't give an excrement, as they say. He doesn't care, and he doesn't have to care, and no one can make him care, I guess.
Well, and we tried. I mean, the legislature passed bills over and over and over again. The courts have, the first ruling of the Supreme Court said, oh, no, the only reason the governor has his power is because the legislature gave it to him, and you guys can take it away. So what do? In a bipartisan manner, we vote to take it away. And then the Supreme Court says, he goes to court and says, no, you can't take it away from me. And the Supreme Court says, yeah, you can't take it away from him. Hopefully the federal courts, I mean, we lost, there was an early case in a federal court, but that wasn't necessarily the end of it. You know, he does seem to react to, we pass a bill that says that construction should open, and before he signs it, he opens construction and auto sales and real estate. And, you know, so he does have to realize that he's putting the members of his own party in the legislature in a tough position, because it's an indefensible position. They can't defend it anymore.
I say, Representative Greg Rothman with us of the 87th District of Pennsylvania, I say this often, you and I have never spoken before, but, you know, I know that offices like yours don't get a lot of attention from constituents, but boy, if ever it matters now who your state rep, your state senator, the Supreme Court justice on the ballot, you know, these people now matter. Your county commissioners, they matter a lot now. We're learning a lot about how pivotal these people can be. Yes?
Absolutely. And it's and by the way, we can. I mean, we don't need that many more Democrats to vote with us, and we can override his veto. I think the most likely override would be on the bill that passed unanimously out of the Senate and with a wide majority in the House. Representative Seth Groh from New York County has a bill that would require the right-to-know offices to stay open in the time of emergency, and the governor is going to veto it. He said it's incredulous. He said the other day that if he were in the legislature, he would have voted for it too, but he's going to veto it. Like, what's the? I've only been in the House for 5 years, and so I had no experience in government before that, and all my experiences in the private sector, where government was so inefficient and so ineffective, and it just got in the way of the private sector. I could have, in my wildest nightmares, never imagined that you would have one person who just feels like he's the king. And
yeah.
It's dangerous for democracy, too, by the way, because we are the experiment is we're the consent of the governed.
Yes.
People are going to stop listening to the government if they continue to make capricious and arbitrary decisions.
What is the general consensus among you guys? I assume it's outrage like I have about the Lebanon County situation, the idea that this guy's withholding federal money. It's not even state money. It's federal money. He's not giving it to Lebanon County because he doesn't like the way the Republican commissioners voted against him. And his statement to justify withholding it was, well, maybe the citizens of Lebanon County will learn how learn who their commissioners are and vote differently the next time. I mean, he's outwardly threatening Pennsylvanians. He's the freaking governor, representative. I've never heard anything like it.
Well, he's actually done it. I mean, it's not even threatening.
That's true.
He's withholding the money. That he signed a bill, included in the bill, said the money was going to Lebanon. I mean, he's in violation of the bill that he passed and he signed. Now, imagine, insert President Trump
for Governor Wolf and insert Pennsylvania for Lebanon County.
Yeah.
And you would be hearing the calls for impeachment of the president for withholding money from Pennsylvania because the president doesn't like the decision that Governor Wolf makes. And that, I mean, that is, I believe it may be grounds for impeachment. Certainly the members of the Lebanon delegation, and I think that's up to 30 other members of the House have signed on to an impeachment bill. I'm not sure that necessarily makes things better because then Lieutenant Governor Fetterman became governor, and he's even more disconnected. Now, his may have something to do with anyway.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. It's the Adams family, I call that crew. We've got quite a motley crew running Pennsylvania in the executive branch right now. Good Lord. Listen, Representative, thanks for your time. I just gave you a promotion there. Maybe one of these days, huh?
Yeah, well, I don't know about that.
but thank you for your time. I hope you'll come back.
Absolutely. Anytime, Chris. Thank you. And keep up the fight. And, you know, this is what makes America great is freedom, and that's it. And this is an assault on freedom, and we've got to fight back. So, thank you.
Pennsylvania State Representative Greg Rothman of the 87th District here in Pennsylvania, 846. Telephone number 610-850-0990, 610-850-0990. Hey, who won Katie's book, by the way, in there, Fast Eddie?
It was Ann from Collegeville.
Congratulations, Ann. Thanks for listening. I hope you'll enjoy Katie's new book. Katie Failinger, my special guest today on the podcast. We're going to do a deeper dive in that conversation if you didn't hear it. My happy place, how I DIY'd my own bliss. You know, media people telling war stories. I think you'll enjoy some of them. That's the podcast today at chrisstegall.com. Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Good morning, Philly. This is Dennis Prager, weekday afternoons at 1 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
8:56 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Mike Gallagher just around the corner. Hope you'll check out my podcast. I had a good one yesterday, if I do say so myself. We carried Kayleigh McEnany's White House press briefing. Every now and again, when events like that coincide with the recording of the podcast, I'll just jip that stuff and do live commentary over it. Except Kayleigh is really composed and professional. I just scream and yell at the idiot reporters. So if you want to listen to a little of that, I'm MST3K, as they call it. Mystery Science Theater 3000, the White House press briefing with Kayleigh yesterday. It's pretty
fun.
Love
that show.
Check it out. That's at chrisstegall.com or wherever you download podcasts. And if you're an Apple iTunes, I hope you will very specifically give that a 5-star review. That is very, very helpful in spreading the good word if you enjoy the show. Katie Failinger will be my special guest today. We're going to do a deep dive in her career change. I think there are a lot of people who hate their job. That's not a secret, right? A lot of people hate their job. I'm not one, but there are a lot of people that hate them.
I think so, for sure.
I'm blessed that I've always done what I love, for the most part. There was a couple of hiccups, but otherwise I've been blessed to do what I love.
Yeah.
A good number of people hate going to work every day. Katie is one of the people that did and finally did something about it, and she's written a book about it, so I think that's going to be fascinating unto itself, how she got there, how she did it. Sue's been waiting in Lansdale. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I'd like to say that, you know, the citizens of Pennsylvania are at a loss as to how to fight back against these governors and whatnot that are eliminating our freedoms. And it's been suggested that there could be a federal class action suit filed. Do you think that there's any interest in doing this?
Yes. Do you mean from a business perspective, like businesses joining together?
No, from a citizen's perspective.
Ooh, gosh. Yes. I would guess there would be. How would that work, do you think? How does that? I'm not great in my legal parlance. How does it work? Is it literally just retaining an attorney?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I was just trying to figure out, you know, whether there's an interest in doing that and who, from an attorney's perspective, would be the type of attorney that we as citizens can go to.
Yeah, I lost a bit of a connection there for some reason, Sue, but I did hear you. And the question was, is there an attorney out there that would represent the citizens in a class action lawsuit? I don't know the quick answer on that. I would imagine there have been attorneys who have stepped forward to sue the governor on behalf of businesses. That's been true. So I would assume there would be an attorney that'd be willing to do it. How likely they feel that they could prevail in a court would be a decision I think they'd have to make. whether they'd take that on or not. It would be a fascinating discussion, for sure. It's, you know, it's days like this and times like this, the frustrations that we feel. It's why I hope that Republicans in Pennsylvania do a better job messaging to the citizenry. Governors, state representatives, state senators, county commissioners matter. And all the years, and you know just as well as I do, maybe you're an active voter. You always participate and you always go vote. But you know how many thousands and thousands, county commissioners, state reps, state senators, who cares? What do they have to do with my life? We know now, don't we?
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM.